Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
First of all, let me wish you and yours a very happy new year and good health in 2014. Wow, just to see and say that figure sends chills down my spine. Where's the time gone? Or as someone recently quipped, quite inelegantly but graphically, life is like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the faster it goes. The transition into 2014 went well in this house. We're fortunate to have all the extended family living close by, so we had a full house during the entire Christmas-New Year season. As a matter of fact, we just said goodbye to my oldest daughter and her family after they spent 2 days with us here in the Emmental. Her children still have another week off from school, so they'll be back again later this week for a few more days. Weather-wise, it wasn't a classic white Christmas, but it was still cold, and we did have a little snow above the village, and of course in the high mountains. The snow did arrive in a big way on the 26th. Since then, we've had more of the white stuff, although much of it has since disappeared. My morning walks in the hills with the dog bring peace and serenity as I look out onto the rolling hills of the Emmental and the majesty of the Bernese Alps, which are etched against the red-orange sky as the sun rises behind them. There's no charge for this, at least not yet. A few minutes ago, I caught the beginning of the German-Swiss TV news. It didn't start with the suffering and misery and the usual trouble spots on this planet, but rather with the lamentations of the Swiss winter sports resorts and cable car operators, who are complaining of a slow start to the season despite excellent snow conditions. The big issue? Lagging business, especially among young people. At one time, I can well remember, the youngsters with their snowboards were heralded as the saviors of the Swiss winter sports industry. But now, these saviors are not coming back in the numbers expected. The obvious question is, why not? For me, the obvious reason is because it's too expensive to do winter sports in Switzerland. It's as simple as that. If you're a regular follower of the Letter from Switzerland and Swiss Political Roundup, it will come as no surprise to you that, in my opinion, and I'm not alone, the cost of everything in this country has gone out of control. The prevailing atmosphere of greed in our world has also had its effect on Switzerland, where rip-off prices were already part of Swiss business tradition. It only just got worse. I don't want to belabor the point, but the fact is, the key elements of the Swiss tourism industry, hotels, restaurants, and ski lifts, have become so expensive that ordinary people cannot afford them. For many years now, many winter sports enthusiasts have quit the Swiss slopes and gone to neighboring countries, where the snow is just as good, but the prices are much lower. The sad fact is, Switzerland has lost much of its mystique as a popular winter sports destination, except for the rich, who seem to be the new target of Swiss tourism operators. Switzerland was long the playground of the jet set, but also of ordinary people. But in recent years, the soaring prices in the Swiss tourism and restaurant industries in general have become prohibitive for many of the traditional visitors, especially those from the UK, US, Germany, and the Benelux countries. But equally sad is the fact that the Swiss tourism industry is doing virtually nothing to correct this problem. In a letter to the director of Switzerland Tourism, this country's official and publicly supported tourism advocacy organization, I outlined the problem as I'm outlining it to you, and added that there was obvious reluctance to wake up the tourism community and give them a stern lecture about the need to reform their greedy ways. I concluded that I didn't expect a reply, and of course, I didn't get one, because they were happy to be let off the hook and go back into denial. So as we enter the winter sports season of 2014, we see no tangible change in the attitude of the Swiss winter sports industry, which moans so painfully and loudly about its self-inflicted misfortune. But instead of making an effort to lower prices to make Switzerland more attractive, the attitude of the Swiss tourism industry is one of arrogance, smugness, and intransigence. Their formula is to ignore the problem in the hope it will go away, and to continue to justify high prices with the argument that Swiss quality has its price. The fact is, you can find the same standard of accommodation and services in other countries, but at a lower price. Swiss tourism circles also insist on continuing with their strategy that the Swiss themselves, as well as the nouveau riche of Asia and Eastern Europe, will make up the shortfall. That works up to a point, but I can't see it working forever. It all depends on how long it will take before the Swiss tourism and restaurant industries wake up and realize that the old tricks and excuses don't work anymore. Just don't hold your breath.
I'm in Switzerland's largest city, Zurich, and Zurich is located on a lake. It's called the Lake of Zurich, logically enough. There's also a river here, which is part of the lake system, we can say. It's directly connected with it, and that's the River Limmat. And for many, many years, I think as long as anybody I can remember anyway, there is a classic attraction here among so many in Switzerland's largest city, as you can imagine. It is cruises that you can take on the river and also the lake. And there's a new dimension. You can even have an aperitif doing it. Really enjoy the high life in Zurich. And to tell us about it is Maurus Lauber of the Zurich Tourist Office. Mr. Lauber, what would you say are the highlights of a cruise on the Limmat and the Lake of Zurich?
It's a fantastic thing to enjoy the city from the waterside and not from the walking or car side. The river is really in the center of the city, and the boat brings you, with a glass roof, brings you under seven bridges from the railway station and the National Museum to the lake, where you have a small cruise on the lake and you will have a fantastic view to the mountainside, and then you come back. It's really a great way to explore the city.
Now, you mentioned a glass roof boat, so in other words, you're independent of the weather. Even if it unfortunately might rain, you could still take the cruise.
Yes, you can take the cruise, and you are very, very close to all the most sites we have in Zurich, like the Grossmünster, the different churches, the beautiful houses, the National Museum. Everything is very close, built to the water, and from the riverboat, you have a beautiful view to those sites.
I wouldn't exaggerate and say this is like Venice in terms of the water penetration around the city, but there is an enormous number of locations that can be reached by the lake or by the river. You're not missing much from the boat at all, are you?
No, you don't. And it's a very, very cheap way to travel around, as the boat is included in every public transportation ticket. If it's a Swiss pass or a Zurich pass or just an ordinary ticket for the city of Zurich, the boat is included. You don't have to pay high supplements or special prices like Amsterdam, Paris or other cities. No, it's really a part of the public transportation, and a lot of locals are enjoying that boat to go from one side of the lake to the other, or to go from the railway station to the lake. Instead of taking a tram or a bus, they take the boat.
We're talking about a scheduled service, a regular service here.
We do, and the boat doesn't run just every 2 hours. It runs every half an hour from the railway station to the lake and back.
Now, we said before that you can have a cocktail, an aperitif, as we prefer to say here in Europe. How does that work?
We have this offer every Saturday evening to enjoy a beautiful weekend. So we start at 6 o'clock from the tourist office and have a special river cruise, as there is a professional guide on board, and the guy will inform the guests about the highlights, about the sites, about the history of the city. We have a beautiful tour on the lake, and at the end we will stop at a very luxury hotel, the only one which is directly at the river, and there on the terrace we will have a beautiful cocktail, so the people are getting ready for a beautiful Saturday night evening with dining and partying.
And how long do these cruises last?
It takes about 1.5 hours, from 6 o'clock to 7:30, then after cocktail, and then you're ready for dining and for partying.
Now, we said that you can be independent of the weather because you're under glass, so you don't have to worry about rain. But what would you say, in your experience, are the classic times of the year to do these cruises?
I recommend to do any river cruise or boat cruise in Switzerland from May to September, October, when you have a beautiful view to the mountains, the water is clear. Imagine the water of the lake and the river have drinking water quality, so you could even swim around and enjoy the whole city. But I recommend to do it by boat. It's really much more relaxing from May to September, October.
Well, cruises are in worldwide, and so come to landlocked Switzerland and enjoy a cruise on the Lake of Zurich and the River Limmat. Thanks very much, Maurus Lauber of the Zurich Tourist Office, for telling us all about these cruises.
Well, as you probably know, Switzerland is a multilingual country. Four national languages, German, French, Italian, and Romansh. English is widely spoken. It is not a national language, but it is perhaps in a way a national language in the sense that it is widely spoken by many people. You can use English anywhere. A tourist will not have any problem, any difficulty. Even in the so-called wilds of the Emmental or in the mountains, you'll always find someone who can speak English, who can understand what it is you need. But English, believe it or not, is also a very important literary language in this country. As though we don't have enough trouble with the four national languages, we add English to the lot. And we're talking here about English language literature. And I want to say from the very beginning, we're talking about English language. And if I say English, I don't mean British. If I mean British, I'll say British. But the English language literature comes from all over the English-speaking world, as we know. And our studio guest today, who knows an awful lot about this field, is Barbara Hum. She is a buyer and in charge of sales and marketing of English books at the OLF company in Fribourg. Now, Barbara, you are German-Swiss, but as we'll hear, your English is absolutely flawless. We'll talk about that later on. Your job every day is to buy books, to look over the market, to import them into Switzerland, and indirectly distribute them, sell them to consumers on the other side. The obvious first question here, Barbara, is how big, really, is the English language book market in Switzerland?
Very big, actually. I think if you take figures, must be around 15 to 16, 17 million Swiss francs worth a market.
And how many books is that a year? Can you keep track?
No, I can't keep track of that, guys.
How does that compare with the market for the domestic languages, the national languages?
That would be perhaps between 10 and 20%.
Which is
substantial. It's very substantial.
Of course, the foreign population of Switzerland is about 20%, but they're not all English language speakers, of course.
No, a lot of them are pupils, actually. We sell an awful lot of school books, ELT, English language teaching books, from various ELT publishers.
To the Swiss themselves.
To the Swiss themselves, to the schools, through the bookshops, to the schools. There are also an awful lot of people who used to live abroad in English-speaking countries, have come back and try to keep up their English in reading in English, or people who speak enough English, like you said before, there people do speak well English, who don't want to wait for the translation and will buy the original.
It takes a certain amount of courage to read a book in another language, even if you speak it well. You have to really be devoted to it. I mean, you have to commit yourself to reading it. And what you're saying, it seems to me, is that many, many native Swiss people are committed enough to take on a book in the English language. It's almost a bit surprising because there's so much literature in the native languages available.
Yeah, I think so. There are a lot of people who do read. It's not always the very, very upmarket literature. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of thrillers. Romance is a very big market. So it doesn't take that much. If you are able to speak a bit of English, you can read quite a lot.
What about the breakdown of man, woman, age, educational background? Have you been able to do much research into that?
I think there'd be more women reading than men, especially fiction, literary fiction. Men tend to read a lot of science books, technical books, a lot less fiction. And then schools.
That's the so-called technical market,
yes.
The non-fiction market.
Exactly.
Can you quantify that? I mean, how much is fiction, how much is non-fiction?
Ooh, that's very difficult. I think it's probably half-half if you count ELT with it.
Mm-hmm. What we've had, of course, in the last few years is a tremendous increase in the importance and popularity of, for example, computers, informatics, this huge field. And there's so much technical literature available, especially from the United States, the land of the computer. Have you felt this, actually, in your sales figures, that there's a lot of interest in this field of computers and informatics?
There is a lot of interest, but sales are actually quite stable at the moment because a lot of books are translated more or less at the same time, so there's no need to go for the English book, for the English original. They buy the German version or the French version. It's mainly the upmarket, the very, very scientific books, which we do sell in English language.
There they want the original.
Exactly.
Or there's no translation,
exactly.
As you were going to say. Incidentally, where are these people located? Can you focus in on a place? I think, for example, of Geneva, this huge international city in French Switzerland, of course, the United Nations, the specialized agencies. I would think first of Geneva as being perhaps the biggest potential market, but is that true?
I think Zurich is actually the biggest market for English books.
The biggest city is the biggest market?
Yes, I think so. I think so. And probably the reason is because in Geneva, a lot of people travel quite regularly in and out and don't buy all their books here. While in Zurich, I think people are staying there. They don't go out every week or every month. I think that makes a big difference.
Let's take a look at the books themselves. There's one thing, we were talking about trends in books, and we'll be discussing this later too, but there's one thing that caught my eye in many of the Swiss bookshops in the native languages, especially in German, it seems to me. There has been a huge explosion in the popularity of New Age and esoteric books in the last few years. And when I was in North America not too long ago, I was in bookshops in Canada and in the United States, and I literally passed row after row after row, shelf after shelf of New Age books. But I was surprised to find out that this popularity of New Age books in the English-speaking world itself has not been reflected so much in your sales figures here in Switzerland. Any idea why not?
No, it hasn't reflected at all, actually. I think it's probably because the market is saturated with the French books and the German books. And if you take all the expatriates, English-speaking expatriates, and take only the percentage who do read New Age books, you're down to very, very little.
They can be very hard reading, I guess, and in that case you want it in your native language, probably.
I think they probably are. I'm no big fan of esoteric books, I must admit, but I think most people would go for the German or the French version.
And perhaps the expats who are here, business type, more hard-nosed, and none of that nonsense for me.
Quite likely. Also a lot of people from the embassies, and I don't think they're too much
They've
into
got other
the
problems
esoteric.
On their
exactly.
mind. What about the nationality, if I could use that word, the nationality of the English language books that are most in demand in Switzerland? What is the biggest country of origin?
It's definitely the UK.
I'm surprised when you consider the output from the U.S. It's such a giant market there, and so much is coming out on the market. But you say the U.K. Any good reason for that?
Yes, I think the biggest reason is we are culturally much closer to the U.K. than we are to the U.S.
Whether the Britons like it or not, it's Europe. It's closer
exactly.
anyway.
It is closer. It is definitely much closer. And you see it in the covers as well.
Mm.
It's completely different.
What criteria do you use in choosing a book?
The biggest criteria is how known is the author. is do people go into the bookshops and ask for somebody? How big is the marketing behind an author, behind a book? Because that influences immensely the sales.
How likely is it to sell?
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Who is being asked for these days? What are the leading authors of the moment?
Oh, it's the ever John Grisham, like all the time. Judy Blume is coming with a new book. All the big thriller authors, the new Tom Wolfe, which we sold like hundreds of. And it's the big, big names who are in the New York Times, who are in San Francisco Times, everywhere.
So if you look at the bestseller list in a leading U.S. or U.K. city, it's reflected pretty well here.
The top three or four, yes, and then it gets a bit difficult.
Incidentally, are there any English language authors you know of who are actually living and working in Switzerland?
There are a few visiting. There are a few living, like Peter Ustinov, who lives outside Lausanne, overlooking the lake, nice panorama.
And his grapevines and his dog breeding.
He enjoys life, I think, there.
He seems to, yes.
He's very often here. Also, some of his books take place in Switzerland, like his new one, who will take place in Geneva. There are people like John Le Carré, who used to study in Bern.
Yeah, he lived here, didn't he?
He lived here, yes. He still visits every year Switzerland. He comes by.
Switzerland is, of course, a common venue mentioned in many works by many authors, even if they don't know Switzerland that well. It seems to have the carryover from the Cold War intrigue or the post-Second World War, the neutral country, a lot of shady characters hanging out here, and they keep coming back, especially in espionage and mystery. But is it really, it's not the Switzerland of today, is it?
Oh, no.
It's based on the recollections of these authors that go back quite a few years.
Exactly. I think a lot of it is also clichés that do come from books as well.
People seem to like clichés, though.
Yes, so everybody does.
Is there any native English language literature written here, which is actually also published in this country?
There is very, very little. There are a few authors who have their own publishing houses, who do publish their own books or publish books from friends or make contacts they made afterwards. It's very, very difficult to publish English books in Switzerland for the Swiss market. There are a few people living here who have American publishers and who probably take 50 or 100 copies back home here and sell them to friends and relatives, but it's very little.
What about prices? I remember it was always said in the past that English books sold in Switzerland were more expensive than the same titles bought abroad. And some people said, you're better off just getting on a cheap flight to London for the weekend, go to Foyle's bookshop and buy them up because you'll save so much more, so much money. That's not true anymore, is it?
No, that's definitely not true anymore. The markups have become very, very small. Probably thanks to competition in the market, thanks to e-markets, the internet sales.
The e-commerce, the internet.
Yes, e-commerce, thank you.
Yeah.
Markups have become very, very, very small.
This is a difficult question, again, remembering that Switzerland is not an English-speaking country. I mean, not legally anyway. It's not a national language. If we look at the titles that you have in stock in Fribourg, mm-hmm. what you're importing, how big, how rich is the selection of English language literature that you can offer compared to a well-stocked, not the biggest, not the smallest, but the average well-stocked bookshop in an average U.S., Canadian, Australian, or British city?
I think you can very well compare it. We have most bestsellers, most books who are talked about at the moment, we stock. If we don't stock it, we will get it for you, or that your bookshop will get it for you through us. The world has become so small, you can get anything, really, which you want. And if you take the big bookshops, the specialist bookshops, like Stauffacher in Bern, Sterli Zurich, or Bayeux-Chantepoulet in Geneva, the range of books they have is definitely comparable with mid-sized bookshops in English-speaking countries.
And these organizations, these shops you mentioned, actually have either specific English corners in the large shops or actually an English bookshop, a separate entity, for example, in Bern.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's also a cultural meeting point, isn't it? I know, for example, Stauffacher in Bern, I'm sure there are others in other cities, where people go to meet socially, to hear readings, visiting authors, talk to visiting authors. There is quite a lively English literature scene in this country.
Very much so, very much so. People meet and exchange ideas, exchange the names of new authors they've read. It's very much a meeting point.
We have an event coming up in April, I believe it's always in April, in Geneva. It's the Geneva Book Fair, which is a very important book fair, certainly in Switzerland. How does it compare internationally in terms of its importance?
It's not that big like the big international book fairs like London or Frankfurt, the biggest in the world. It's nothing like it. For Switzerland, it is the important book fair, but it is a public book fair where people can go look at books, buy books. Other fairs like London or Frankfurt are just for professionals, industry professionals. So for Switzerland, it is a very important fair.
Now, OLF is there just about every year.
Every year.
I think a couple of years ago, I met you and we did an interview there before at the English book section of OLF. And I'm just wondering if we look now to what you're beginning to put together. What do you have in mind? What trends can you see? What kind of an assortment or offer are you going to present in Geneva?
It's going to be very much like a bookshop. A little bit of everything. A big part will be fiction, mass market paperbacks. There will be non-fiction books like atlases. We also will remainder some books, so if you want some cheap books, come and have a look. There will be illustrated books. We try to show the range that we can offer and also the range publishers have.
We haven't mentioned children's books. I assume that you do have an assortment of children's books too.
We do have an assortment, although it's not that big. We seem to have difficulties with children books. We have more illustrated picture books. And then as soon as at the age of 10, we seem to lose the readers. They probably go to French language books or German language books.
One of the native languages, the local languages. Well, it sounds like what you're offering in English, in terms of English literature, is like a good medium-sized supermarket. It's got a bit of everything in there.
That's right, exactly that.
I have to ask you this question. As we've heard now, your English is fantastic, and you are native German-Swiss. You're from the canton of Aargau.
Yes.
How did you pick up such good English?
Well, the basics I picked up at school, obviously, and then I went to Ireland and spent some time in Ireland shepherding sheep.
Good place to shepherd sheep.
Good place to learn English. and also traveled a lot, traveled around Australia, New Zealand for a year. I've got many friends all over the world, English speaking. And I read in English, which helps my vocabulary.
You are a genuine reader yourself. You don't just work in the field, you actually read.
I read.
Well, it's been fascinating to hear about all the literature available in the English language in Switzerland, who the people are reading it, and something about your problems, Barbara Hum, in sorting it all out for us. And actually, I guess book readers, English literature readers, are certainly happy that someone acts as a filter to bring in only the best into the country. Otherwise, time is limited to do it yourself. Thank you very much for coming by mid-morning.
You're welcome. Thank you.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.